The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list, from toys for the kids to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love and cash back is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Ed is not human. The book specifically says that he is a vaxillion.
Yes, I did notice that. I had no idea what it was.
I did not either. And I think this is a kind of collected up from words of Brandon kind of things. Vaxillion means he's from the planet Vax and that he's not human.
Okay.
That's all we know. And apparently Brandon's been asked a bunch of questions about this and has very specifically refused to answer. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. We are now on episode 282, Isles of Emberdark, continuing on into the Emberdark. We're going to cover chapters 25, 26, 27, and 28. I'm here with Paul and Trevor, as always. Paul, I think it was you I was giving some crap the other day for decorating for Christmas too early. That's what I spent my entire day today. I was decorating for Christmas, so How's Christmas over in your household?
Wonderful. So if you want to know the whole debacle, we put up icicle lights on our house. Very exciting. The superior type of exterior lighting, in my opinion. We did that, enjoyed it for about 2 days, and then it stopped working. And I was like, well,
oh,
that stinks. Then we were gone for Thanksgiving. And then thankfully, my mother-in-law had the genius idea. I didn't even know this was the thing. But your Christmas lights have a fuse in them. And sometimes that fuse will go kaput, and you can replace that. I didn't know that was in there. This was news to me. And replace that, and I have lovely lights on outside. I can see them through my window. It's wonderful. Also, pardon for our listeners. We had here in Texas, we went from about 75 degrees to about 35 degrees overnight. And everyone here is all stopped up because of it.
Not fun. Yeah, it was a nice toasty 14 degrees here at my house today. Trevor's up at even higher elevation, so it's probably even colder by your house, Trevor.
10 this morning when I woke up.
Yeesh.
And then I drove home from work through a blizzard to get to the podcast. Elliot, I need your help.
Yes.
I need your help in publicly shaming Paul for shaming me for drinking and purchasing eggnog. Paul's an eggnog hater, and I need to publicly disgrace him for it on the podcast. Can you back me up here?
I can absolutely back you up here. That is rather disgraceful. Eggnog is the joy of the Christmas season.
Thank you.
Only to be drunk during Christmas.
Thank you.
I will definitely go that direction.
Thank you.
I don't drink eggnog any other month of the year. But when December comes around, oh, man. Cup of eggnog?
A common yeah. Elliot W.
Yeah.
Well, for all the people out there who don't love eggnog in their festive season, I'm sure they will be quick to back me up that it is a bit odd of a drink. It's one of those things that about a year or two ago, I assumed, oh, it's one of those things as a kid I just discounted and never gave a fair try. So I've tried eggnog and it never seems worth drinking, that's for sure.
You do have to do one thing when you're drinking eggnog is not think of eggs. If you do think of eggs while you're drinking eggnog, your brain will like start to think that you're just drinking straight eggs. But if you don't do that, then it's great.
Yummy.
Yeah, you don't even have to brainwash yourself into liking eggnog, like Elliot says. It's just genuinely good.
It is good.
Okay. I prefer anyway, eggnog scrambled personally.
But... I needed to save that for the podcast so that it was recorded somewhere to get Elliot on my side. Okay. I'm ready for the summary if we're ready for it.
Yes, please do.
Okay. We meet two new crew members on the dynamic. We mutiny and we save the day. That's my...
Wow. Okay. Brief.
You've really brought the time down this week.
Correct. My speed run cannot be beaten.
Fair enough.
Does there need to be more said in a summary though? There's plenty of little things
you're
to
leaving
pull,
out
but...
one very giant.
All right. There's like
many
a
limbed
that we,
thing.
Yeah. We like fly around a building that moves and doesn't like us or something. It's not.
Yes. Yes. That. But yes, we have four chapters today, and they are all in the point of view of Starling and her crew. Most of my notes came in chapter 25, the first one, but then there's some fairly exciting events in the other chapters too. Where do you guys want to start with chapter 25?
With our two new crew members. I don't care which one. Ed or Leonor. Which one, Paul?
Let's go Ed.
Okay. Ed. Sorry, I muted myself. Ed is our resident arcanist on the dynamic. He is our hired history dude. And when they're flying to go confront this entity, they literally turn to Ed and say, Ed, what do you got for me? And he breaks out his little lore book and he says, well, and then he gives them a little lore spiel about entities. Big nerd, cool guy. And yeah, he's probably my favorite of the crew that I've met so far. Ed's pretty cool.
Ed is the lore guy, and I love it because I'm the lore guy. I am the guy that people like start a conversation about the Cosmere with and then probably regret that they did so because I start lore dumping on them. Sorry, everyone who's ever talked to me about the Cosmere.
Mm-hmm. Starling in this chapter walks past him before we're even introduced to him. So we're from the point of view of Starling, and she walks past him to go talk to Leonor. We're introduced to Leonor first, but we walk past Ed first, and Ed's reading a book. Of course he is. He's reading his little nerd book, and Brandon's like literally writing in, we'll get back to him later. He's a nerd. That's all you need to know. And then we do get back to him later, and he's great. And then we have Leonor, who is a ex-Malwish Space Force star pilot. She is a Malwish Skadrian deserter. She is a crackshot pilot, or whatever the equivalent of crackshot would be for a pilot. An ace, I suppose. And she's willing to... I actually don't know the status of her contract with Zysus and why she's on this ship. I don't think we know that yet. But she's hired on this ship as the pilot. She's great, as we find out in chapters 27 and 28. And then, yeah, she's really handy to have, except for the fact that she can't go to Scadrial because she's wanted as a deserter. So pretty much it adds to our Millennium Falcon thing of, you know, I'm wanted in seven systems, or, you know, whatever the line is from A New Hope. And she seems like a nice lady, and I'm curious to know why she's a Malwish deserter, but yeah. She's not allowed to go to Scadrial, and anybody who's allied with Scadrial, which seems to be a decent amount of systems at this point. So our crew is definitely firmly planted on the Rosharan side of the spectrum here, because we have a Sleepless who is apparently allowed to be killed on sight on Scadrial. Thought that was crazy. And and then a Skadrian who's not allowed to back on Skadrial. So if we're ever to ally with anyone on the dynamic, I feel like it would have to be a Rosharan side of the spectrum, but that is what it is.
Interesting take there. Paul, what were your thoughts of Leonor and Ed?
Yeah, I was going to say, Trevor, I hadn't thought of this as like the Millennium Falcon, but you're kind of right about that, of everyone is a wanted criminal and like
to varying degrees, yeah.
Yeah, respected some places, not respected other places. But also it's not for any wrong reasons that we know of. We don't know exactly why. Well, sorry, wrong reasons as in some of them may deserve the status they have.
Okay.
I don't know, even like Starling, right? We don't know yet everything there, but Starling is at least not on good terms with maybe some other dragons and people of Yolen, so you know, it's a bit of a ragtag group we've got here. I really liked these characters. I thought Ed was really cool. Every time I hear Arcanist, I don't know, it makes me chuckle a little bit to myself, because what is really an Arcanist? Right? Isn't it just something that they just stick into any fantasy and sci-fi thing of like, this guy kind of is smart and wise in the ways of things here in our fantasy story. Like, that's usually what I think of him. Like, is the master of the arcane? It's just a bit ambiguous. So I was hung up on that. But yep, our Arcanist is cool. Malwish here as well. Leonor, pretty cool. I think the name Leonor is pretty at face value. Cool name. But yeah. We have the spelling of Zietzi in our outline, and I appreciate that, because if you were to test me on that, I would have failed.
Yeah. Standard. I was typing that into the outline and realized I probably should have tested you guys, because that's a funky one.
I'm going to stand on this hill. I think it's actually the narrator's fault why we would have got that wrong, Paul, because she specifically says Zietzi. There's a sound at the end of the word, and the way it's spelled, it's a Z. So that would be Zietzi, which is not how she says it. She says Zietzi.
Well, that's actually not what I would have gotten wrong, Trevor. I picked up that there's two Z's involved here. I don't know how you're supposed to know the vowels here, but and I did not think the first Zeet was Z-E-E-T.
And what would have really gotten you guys, I think, is probably something I don't think we've seen before, which is capital letters in the middle of a name.
That's true.
Have we seen that before?
Because reasons. We've seen apostrophes.
Sure.
I don't... it's probably happened. We've seen a lot, like literally hundreds, maybe even 1,000 names by now. But anyway.
We've seen plenty of titles. I'm not sure if we've seen a double capital in a name. I'll have to think about that.
But anyway, before we talk about Zietzi, I wanted to couple things quick back on Leonor and Ed real fast before we move on from them. Paul, you were closing in on the Arcanist tile, which I think was kind of interesting. I'm with you. It's a cool term, but it's gotten to the point where it's a little generic now in the sci-fi and fantasy realm. I'm with you. It feels like every world, every realm, every universe has an Arcanist. And that might be on purpose, because Ed is from Silverlight. Silverlight is where folks like the 17th Shard are, which is, I almost kind of think of as like an Earth parallel sort of thing. It's Silverlight is where we've got maybe the most Earth-like-ish people out there. And so him using a term that we are very familiar with, when he could have easily come up with something new like he often does, I think might be on purpose.
Okay.
There's one other hint about Ed in this chapter. I don't know if you guys noticed.
I do want to say something about Ed. I had to keep this straight in my head, because I was definitely very confused the first time I listened. The second time I listened, Leonor is the Skadrian, but Ed is the Pathian, not from Skadriel. So he is a Pathian from Silverlight. And I was like, what? Like, that's not a thing.
Yes. And he says something about that that I want to talk about, but I think it's not in these chapters.
Spoilers.
next week. I know we're spoiling this. Next week, we'll talk more about the fact that he's a Pathian. But yes, keep that in mind. Ed is a Pathian. He is from Silverlight. But I'm going to drop a little bit of information on you that is not a spoiler of this book. It's something I've learned when I was researching this. Ed is not human. The book specifically says that he is a Vaxillian.
Yes, I did notice that. I had no idea what it was.
I did not either. And I think this is a kind of collected up from words of Brandon kind of things. Vaxillian means he's from the planet Vax and that he's not human.
Okay.
That's all we know. And apparently Brandon's been asked a bunch of questions about this and has very specifically refused to answer.
Oh, okay.
And so the planet Vax may feature in the future is kind of what I'm getting out of that. But I didn't catch that at all my first time around through, but preparing notes for this time, I keyed in on that and tried to do a little bit of research, and there's not much to find other than, yeah, from Silverlight, Pathian, not human, Arcanist.
Cool.
Zizi. Let's move on to Zizi. Zizi is also from a rather different place, the Grand Apparatus. What'd you guys think about the Grand Apparatus?
So I'll throw this to Paul first, but I will tease it with this. This was not the first time I'd heard the term Grand Apparatus.
Well, that's a bit of an unfair teaser to throw my way, because I just want to hear about that. To my knowledge, this is the first time I've seen a Grand Apparatus. So either I forgot something, maybe in like one of those important stories like Alamance or Jack or something, or what. But the visuals of this were amazing. This was something that one thing that I've loved so much about this book is I feel like I've had such clear mental imagery and really fantastic, cool imagery of like this jet black, not ocean, and these things and all this stuff. And it was really cool. And I love the description of how this thing moves. And it's like you sort of see it moving, but you see where it was more than where it's moving to. I don't know. It was just very ethereal, very cool. So honestly, most of my thoughts were about the visual of it. I'm expecting that this is going to be something bigger. We're going to have bigger, more discoveries with this. But absolutely crazy. I was glad to have our little Arcanist friend here now to talk about it.
Okay. The one time that I have heard the Grand Apparatus before was in a Brandon Sanderson Q&A. And somebody asked him, I'm going to kind of make this up on the spot, but somebody asked him a question about some location in the Cosmere, and he gave them a RAFO, and then they rebutted like with, oh, come on, you can give me something. And I think they were asking about Silverlight or Yolin or something like that. Some place that we knew existed at the time, but didn't know anything about. So they were asking him, let's say it was Silverlight, and he gave him a RAFO, obviously. And then as like an off-the-cuff thing, Brandon throws out the teaser. Yeah, if you think Silverlight is interesting, wait till you hear about the Grand Apparatus. And that was a couple years ago. And ever since then, there have been threads and huge theory storms online. And me personally, I've just considered, what could it be? I was completely way off, by the way, on what could it be. So we knew it was a term simply because of how Brandon taunted us once with it. And so that was the only time I'd ever heard the term Grand Apparatus. Elliot, have we heard it canonically before this?
Ooh, I didn't actually do research on that. I think the answer is no. I, for some reason, am thinking that we may have heard this in reference to Invention.
Okay.
But I don't remember exactly where, so I'd have to do some digging to find that out. But for some reason, I was thinking we'd already been told that maybe I'm making a jump here, because I think we've been told that Invention kind of runs around and makes cool stuff.
Uh-huh.
The Grand Apparatus seems like a cool stuff. So I'm jumping to the conclusion that this is a product of Invention's work in the Cosmere.
No, no, no. Starling specifically says it's been around since before the Shattering.
She does say that.
Or at least she says, or at least people think so.
Yeah. Maybe I need to do more thinking on my theory here. Regardless, it is specified here that it is run by the Sleepless.
Yes. Now, okay, so we get a little bit more on this. Before last episode, we got a quick teaser of Zizi saying, oh, do you have any idea what they've done to my homeland? And Starling says, no, I don't. But now we get a little bit more on Zizi's homeland, and we get the input that the Sleepless have forcibly taken it over, the Grand Apparatus, and then use it to test on mortals.
Yep.
They use it as a testing facility on mortals. That is what it says in the book. I'm like, whoa. Wow. I mean, what do you have to do to have a standing kill order just for off your race on two planets, Haldane and Scadrial? I feel like having a test facility on any mortal you can find, having a hostile takeover of someone else's homeworld, has got to be up there, right? Like, that's the Sleepless do not have a good name for themselves.
They really don't. And we definitely need to learn a lot more about this place. It's definitely hinted at. I think Hoyd's brought up in the conversation in association. Hoyd has been to the Grand Apparatus at least once. Yep. But it doesn't seem immediately like a terrible, horrible place. ZZ's talking about it as... I thought of the Room of Requirement from Harry Potter. You like submit a request and the Grand Apparatus sends you the room that you need. You know, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Please send me a bathroom. And then you wait a few minutes and then you step through the door into a modular building that's the bathroom. And then when you're done, you type it away. I need a living room now. So please send me a living room.
It's the perfect like communist socialist utopia, right? Where nobody nobody owns anything. You just request it of the Grand Apparatus and it supplies it to you for as long as you need. And then you return.
Yeah. It talks about like all your belongings are in these chests, these like boxes that transfer with you. So when you swap over, there's like a robotic arm, you know, grabbing all your stuff box and bringing it to the next room with you. Crazy.
And I think back in the day, back in Zizi's day, it would have been a great place. But I am under the implication that it is no longer a great place under the
rule of
the Sleepless.
Might not be. And then we learn a fascinating bit about Zizi that I missed completely on my first read. I was rereading this like last week and I flipped a page and I went, how in the world did I not notice this? It's mentioned like three times in this chapter. Zizi is he's like the first mate kind of thing. He's not the pilot.
Operations manager.
There you go. Sure. Yeah. You, Mr. Operations guy over there. He's sitting over there, like running all the systems on the ship. So Leonore is piloting. Zizi's in the seat next to her running all the systems, you know, shields to the fore. What's our like Star Trek equivalent of this? I don't know who the Star Trek equivalent would be.
I'm not a Trekkie. Sorry.
Yeah, we need some Trekkie to tell us who this is equivalent. Anyway, he's over there running all the systems on the ship. He's not touching the control panel. Did you guys notice this?
I did.
His hands are hovering over the control panel, and Starling describes it as lines of electricity, like Emperor Palpatine style, running from his fingers down to the control panel and doing all the whizzy, quick operations. How did I miss this on my first read? Were you guys as mind blown when you saw that as me?
I was, but not for the same reason. It specifically says it's a northern Skadrian control panel.
Yeah.
Which made me think this is probably designed to be steel pushed to be activated. And Zizi is using whatever he has to operate it rather than steel pushing.
Okay, but are you not like floored by, is this an entirely new magic system that we haven't seen before?
It certainly could be. Yeah, it certainly could be.
It's got to be. We haven't seen anything like this before, right?
Zizi altogether has made me think that it's only new things being introduced here. I feel like I agree. I think this is something completely new. Funny enough, it wasn't from this, but it wasn't spurred on by something that I read in this book. But I had the thought of, if I got to ask Brandon a question, you know, I feel like it'd be fun to ask, would a Jedi, like, be very quick to get invested if they were dropped into the Cosmere, you know? or would they be able to use the Force or something like that? And, yeah, I think we're seeing a, you know, I don't think he's, like, a Sith Lord status here, but, like, sending some kind of electrical current and stuff from himself is pretty crazy. Cool. So yeah, I thought that was neat.
So anyway, something funky's going on with ZZ. I'm curious for more there.
The thing that's most relevant to Dusk in all these chapters is Starling goes on like a page rant about navigation in the Ember Dark. And she talks about how with all the technology they have, it's still really easy to get lost in the Ember Dark. You have to follow these pre-drawn lines, like trade routes between systems or planets or whatever the term you want to call it is. And if you go off even by an hour, a couple hours, you can get turned around real fast and not know where you're going. The way that she describes navigating in the Ember Dark is you can use the Nell and the current, which I'll come back to those two terms in a second, but you have to know where you are in order to use that second data point as useful. Because she uses the example of if you have a compass, but you're lost in the wilderness, it'll tell you which way north is, and you can keep going in the same direction. But it won't tell you where you are, so because you know where the Nell is doesn't really help you unless you already know where you are, and then you can get to where you need to go with the triangulation. I thought that was fascinating. Back to the Nell and the current. Thank you, Brandon. You teased this last book. Paul, do you remember this?
Teased this? Oh, last...
In Wind and Truth, Nell, the Nell and the current were mentioned. Do you remember in what context?
Okay. No, whenever he said last book, I was thinking how this book is divided up into books. I was thinking at the start of this book, and no to both. I don't remember for sure.
So I actually did a little homework here, and I have some quotes for you if you'd like me to read it for you.
Yeah, but I'll do it off memory to show off.
Go ahead.
As best I can. So the Nell and the current, I remember specifically because they were in Wind and Truth early release chapters. And I talked about it for the first time on the podcast without you two, with Tim and David, probably over a year ago now at this point. And it was mentioned in context of Shadesmar. It was a Shallan chapter. And I won't be able to spout you the exact quote, so I can't go for the home run here, but that's as much as I got. And it has to do with the currents through the beads of the ocean, and the Nell had to do something with the death of a god. And we were hypothesizing, okay, which god? Is it Honor? Is it on Sel? Where does the Nell point? And we all had a different theories. I'm kind of curious to go back which one of us was right. But go ahead, Elliot.
But before I fill in the cracks, and the cracks are very few, I'm very impressed.
Uh-huh.
Did you get your answer to the death of a god?
Yes, absolutely.
And it was?
Threnody. It's the ambition.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Yes, I am very impressed. This is chapter 7 of Wind and Truth, very early. Nope, 11. Chapter 11 of Wind and Truth. You just about got it all. So Shallan and Drahi are talking, and Adolin's here too, are talking about, I don't even know what all they're talking about, but anyway, they start talking about, oh yeah, we have these fabrials that we found in the tower, and they work in Shadesmar. It says this device points to something far in the distance, something the sibling called the Grand Nell, source of the current, the death of a god. Not at all ominous, Shallan said, sitting up. It gives us a bearing, Drahi explained. This always points to the Nell. I know the angle from lasting integrity we were to take, and I don't think we've strayed too far. And they ramble a little bit on exactly what you were talking about. Of as long as you know where you were or where you've been, then knowing where North is or where the Nell is going to give you some information. There is another mention in Wind and Tooth. Trevor, do you remember this one?
No, I'd have to come up empty on that one. Maybe it's in the spiritual realm there's a current.
It's not spiritual realm. As far as I know, I'm going to read it here in a second. You can tell me. I would be floored if you remembered this. It is from one of the interludes.
I really should come up with this now so that I can impress you.
You
said it's an interlude?
I told you it's an interlude, so you want to guess which one?
It's the eerie one where they're going through the perpendicularity. That'd be my guess.
That is what I thought it was going to be. So when I was doing my research on this and I saw the interlude, I was like, oh, it's going to be those dudes in the eerie place. It's not. It's an even more intriguing one.
You almost floored him.
Almost. Close.
Paul, do you want to take a stab at a random interlude, Wind and Truth, before you tell us?
Just throwing one out there. It's going to be the one where Cultivation talks to Odium. That's an interlude, right? Or was that a main chapter?
Yeah, that's an interlude. Terra Vengeance's point of view, maybe. Yeah,
I think there's
no idea how it could be in that. I'm just going to throw it out there.
It is not that. It is interlude 5 in Wind and Truth, and I will just read. Baxel trod the streets of Azamir unseen. Every inch of him, save his eyes, was wrapped in tight crimson cloths, the tied-off tails of which sometimes escaped his cloak and waved in the wind of an unknown capital C current. Hand on his guitar, slid it to a sheath at his side, he watched for anyone in the crowd who noticed him. Nothing so far. Good.
If I had remembered Baxel was even a character, I actually might have come up with this, because that was one of the craziest scenes we got in Wind and Truth.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking as well. I'm like, he was such an enigma and so many different things going on. I should have known better.
So very intrigued. Even more intrigued about that interlude now that we know a little bit about what the current is.
For a definition, for anyone who hasn't read it recently, the current seemingly flows towards the Nell, and the Nell is, it gives you like a direction, the current, and the Nell is the remnants of what happened on Threnody, or what happened to Ambition via Odium and Mercy. So Threnody blew up, apparently exploded into a bunch of like cosmic sized entities, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But yeah, the death of Ambition's shard went just about as bad as possible, even worse than we originally thought. Because back in Shadows and Times of the Forest of Hell, I think they might actually be on the nicer side of the physical versus the cognitive realm on Threnody. They have this whole thing of, you know, Threnody's out to kill you, there's shades everywhere. I think they might last longer on Threnody than in the Shadesmar version of Threnody based on these chapters. There's a bunch of what they call entities, and there's a dragon, a sleepless, an arcanist, and an expert pilot, and a couple other people on our crew, and all of them are super excited, super scared of this entity from Threnody.
Yep.
To give you a little bit of context on what we're talking about here. So this entity has chased this distress beacon out into the middle of nowhere. It's the investiture has attracted it. And then we'll get into the specific plot points and the action sequence, if you will, of Starling confronting it in a second. But yeah, massive investiture hunting predator on the cognitive realm. And you got to stay close to the highways because people's thoughts ward it off, and it doesn't like to be constrained by human thought or
cognitive thought, I should say, not necessarily human. So yeah, interesting.
And when we get to that, I will pull up the art from the book on this, because we've got a nice little drawing in the book to show you what this thing looks like. But yeah, kind of scary, but then also kind of not at the same time. Our characters seem scared of it, but I feel like we've got a fairly high powered crew here. I don't think I was super worried through much of the sequence, but
Elliot, you told me to ask you this on the podcast, so here I go. Is the term entity capitalized? The way that it was read, it was absolutely capitalized in my head.
It is absolutely not capitalized in the book.
Interesting.
The investiture, the word, is capitalized as always. But yeah, entity is not. I'm going to go double check myself here, but I very, very sure it is not capitalized. It's, I think, a shortened version of just the term we've seen used by a couple of different characters in the past of just invested entity. That's a term. And I think somebody somewhere gets like technical with breaking down different levels of different invested entities. And this is a, you know, type something, something invested.
Type 6-1. What the heck does that mean, Ed?
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like this makes sense to me, Trevor, because I'm like, whatever would be capitalized would be whatever it's an entity of, potentially, is what I'm thinking. I feel like if you have capital E entity, that's a hard thing to define. I feel like if you had a capital E entity, you'd be more so defining an individual item. Like, I don't know, if you were to define that an entity is like, I don't know, let's say Shallan is an entity, but she is made up of her various personalities or whatever, or something like that. I feel like entity would have to get way broader. So this, I didn't even think, even when you were mentioning it in the outline, I didn't necessarily think it'd be capitalized, because I feel like you'd add a lot of rules right quick, unless it's just entity of something else that's capitalized.
I think the term was used by Vasher or Zile back in Rhythm of War when he calls Kaladin a type 1 invested entity, and he calls himself and Silfrenna a type 2 invested entity. And I just kind of assumed that was Vasher being quirky and using his own terms for things, but I guess not. I guess that's a more widely accepted term of invested entity.
Which makes you wonder if Zile has crossed paths with maybe some of these arcanists.
Or an invested entity.
Or also that.
Because the Nell exists back in Stormlight, so presumably these things exist back in Stormlight.
While we're talking about this thing, do you guys want to just take a look at it?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Trevor, pull up my screen there. Here is the art that is in the book. Now, this is a few moments after we've kind of discussed up until this point. This is after Starling has dove out of their craft as it's flying. I want you guys' takes on that here in a minute. Lands on the stranded ship where the Irialli family is. And in an attempt to ward off this giant entity, she reveals her true form as a dragon. Not that she becomes a dragon, because she can't. She's got the manacles on, but she can like project an image that's the equivalent of that, and that is this scene here.
She crosses her arms, gives the Bridge Four salute, and her dragon comes out. It doesn't say Bridge Four salute, but it does say she crosses her arms like a Bridge Four salute. Cool. Yeah, this is, for whatever reason, I assumed this would be from like a straight-on point of view from the description I got of it in the book. The art sounds just as epic as it is in the book. They do a great job describing this. So I was quite excited to see it on the podcast. Yeah, this is cool.
I feel like this is a very difficult to depict being. The description of the book is wild.
Yeah.
Of skyscraper length, arms that are hundreds of yards long, not feet. Yards. The arms are hundreds of yards, and it has hundreds of arms. That's what the book says. I feel like you can't even portray that in a picture. That's crazy.
Yeah, I appreciate this. To add to my list of random things to reference, what I was imagining with this beast, at first, it doesn't really fit, but there's a very popular anime called Attack on Titan with these giant titanic humanoid things, obviously. And I somewhat had that image of some of these gigantic titans. But yeah, the mini arms thing threw me for a loop. I think this, the art in this book has been so good. And this, I'm like, that is fairly close to how I pictured it in my mind's eye, even without this. And I'm glad, and I think that's a testament to how well this book, I think, describes the things we're encountering. I feel like I have a good image for that, and all our little 5-foot by 1-foot snake from last episode and things like that. With the scale you were giving, Elliot, I'm actually more surprised by the size of the dragon portrayal. But like, is it? Is it this a humongous dragon?
Yes. Like, I would agree with that.
Like half a skyscraper tall, for, you know.
Yeah.
With from feet to wing tip, at least. Like those are some really big wings.
If you look down there at the base of the dragon, though, you can see Starling. And Starling is normal-ish sized. So if you've got, you know, 5 or 6 foot Starling down there, I think our dragon is only 50 feet. Maybe that's half a skyscraper, but yeah, I think our description from the book gives us would have this entity being even larger. You just can't draw on a page.
Well,
yeah,
and it,
I agree.
It describes it as the other, like it extends all the way to wherever the dynamic is trying to swoop into them. So like this thing expands super far as well as climbs super far. So.
Yep, pretty wild. But yeah, some fun art.
Cool.
All right, so our crew is facing down the entity. We got the moment that I described just a second ago where Starling dives out of the ship down onto the stranded ship, and then the rest of the crew go to pull off the diversion plan. So they come up with a diversion plan. What are they carrying in their cargo that they're using as a diversion? You guys catch this?
I was hoping it would be described more, but all it said was light, untapped or unkeyed light.
Unkeyed light.
So I don't know what flavor of light we're talking about, which is rather upsetting.
Well, it is. It is upsetting. I do wish we had more. I am reading a lot into that one single word, light, because I think in other instances, other parts of the story, we've seen other sources of unkeyed investiture.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is specifically like from Roshar. That's where light comes from.
Yeah, I'd be hesitant to say that because investiture kind of manifests itself as light on the cognitive realm, no matter where you are. Like, Kelsier runs around in Mistborn Seeker history and everybody's a glowing little candle.
Yes, but when we see people use unkeyed door,
right,
which happens a few times, it's very specifically a liquid.
Right.
It's jars of liquid.
Yeah.
This, I think, is not that, which raises a million questions for me. Back to the whole, are these guys more maybe aligned towards the Rosharan side? Are they making a cargo run from Roshar? Is that where they maybe came from, where they got this stuff?
I think that's quite likely. I wouldn't say definitive, but yes, it's likely that it is from Roshar. I agree.
Oh, yeah. So I'm reading all of this into one single word on the page. We have nothing else to go off of. But if that is true, man, do I have a lot of other questions. The big question before was, ooh, can you get light off of Roshar? These guys have done so.
The counterpoint, their contraband is legal. to Skadrians. And I feel like Unkeyed Light Skadrians might have issue with.
They do specifically mention that they have legal cargo.
Mm-hmm. Huh. There's your counterpoint.
Eh, I could still see it being a legal substance. With being traded through regular channels.
Sure.
I think the trade of metal is going to be legal, maybe highly controlled, but if you're paying all the right taxes and things like that, then could be legal. I don't know. I'm intrigued by this one single word, capitalized light.
I feel like you might be overthinking it, and light is just letting you know, yeah, this is an investiture, you know.
It could absolutely be the case. But they do go and dump their investiture. It does draw the attention of the entity. Entity goes the other way. They snag up the stranded Irioli family, and they all live happily ever after.
Yeah, they do save the day. Random thought. They say they store their light in aluminum casing so that the entity can't see it. Question. Wouldn't that cause huge problems for Naz being that close to like a bunch of aluminum?
Well, it just means that he probably can't touch the canisters.
Like he can't pass through it like he can everything else.
Right. Or even it's going to do damage to him if he touches them.
Right. Or is it silver? It's silver, actually, that's really dangerous to him, isn't it? I always confuse the two on what they do.
I confuse the two also. I think it's silver.
Because don't they use silver in their bows in Silence for Shadows or whatever, the Forest of Hell?
Yeah,
I think so.
Right. Aluminum is more like deflecting and negating, and Silence is more like
silver.
Silver. It's more like destructive, right?
I'm shaky on my lore, but I feel like the answer is yes.
I think so too. And speaking of invested entities, Naz is an invested entity of some other level of this other thing. So I would bet that the aluminum blocks him, that he can't float through it. And maybe TBD on whether it harms him, maybe just silver harms him.
Yeah, I'll have to brush up.
He's obviously okay here at least, so we know that much.
He can be in the room with the stuff. What are we left with? Oh, one note on this invested entity before we go. When Starling is facing it down, in that moment we just saw in the artwork where she reveals the dragon, she spends a couple paragraphs describing the emotions that she feels.
Yes.
How the being just starts to suck her down, this despair. And she has to very specifically fight against the despair that starts to creep into her mind. And she notes that this is not just a wild animal kind of thing. She notes specifically that this is evil.
Yeah. It's trying to instill fear as like an end goal.
Yes. Yes.
So I wonder if that's a knockoff of ambition, and ambition was like super evil, or maybe the vessel was super evil, or if this is just a side effect of wandering around as a massive thing of negative investiture for thousands of years.
That's actually a great question. I'm not sure I thought about is, does that imply that negative investiture is evil by definition? Or is this, like you said, a hangover from a specific shard that has imbued it with that evilness? Interesting. I don't know.
Or if we're getting all relative, does Starling make the quick assumption that it's evil because she's an investiture entity and it's an anti-investiture entity. And I can't say that word. So does she by default project evil onto it, and then it just reflects it back at her of she's expecting to be super intimidated by this thing, so now she is.
I feel like that it's an entire philosophy discussion right there.
Yes.
That's a great question, Starling. You insist this thing is evil. What is our measure of good and evil in the Cosmere? That's a very, very big question.
Maybe we should have an episode on, is investiture good, or is negative investiture evil? Man, that'd be interesting. Okay. Quick shout out to Starling. It took her 3 chapters to maroon or mutiny to mutiny Captain Crow.
Yeah.
It took Dress 57. So I just wanted to throw that out there. As far as word count goes, efficiency, Starling, you got it on lock.
Well, she's had a huge advantage, right? Because she's a dragon. So I feel like we can cut Tress a little bit of slack here.
And if we're getting technical, I think Starling's been on this ship for 6 months, I think is the time frame given. So we just skipped all that. But as far as word count goes, she's got it on lock.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And man, this Captain Crow, she's just getting picked on all over the place.
Rightfully so. Captain Crow hater, me.
Captain Crow, I'm not a Captain Crow defender. Don't give me that. No, don't get me wrong there. But I will say that her luck is not great with crews.
Maybe she should be a nicer person. Maybe if you keep coming out on the wrong side of the equation, maybe the problem is you.
Well, and let's continue this discussion into chapter 28. So after chapter 28, we've kind of, things have all resolved. We're away from the entity. We're heading back to safety. And Starling goes and talks to Captain Crow, and Crow's just not even mad. She's just like, oh, yep, guess you guys aren't going to follow me anymore. I'll be in my quarters. Drop me off somewhere. What? This must happen to her a lot.
I would say yeah, but that she specifically says she's only been part of one before.
I'm saying that somewhat facetiously. I was,
yes,
mainly just surprised that she doesn't go berserk.
No, I think she learned her lesson from trying to go berserk, is that that's not going to help her. So she doesn't throw her temper tantrum and leaves it to Zysis for next episode.
Ah, yes.
I assume.
So, yeah, by the end of chapter 28, we kind of leave our crew. They've saved the poor, helpless, stranded family, and they're eerie. Heading back.
We didn't mention their eerie Ollie.
They are eerie.
How many eerie homelands have we confirmed at this point, but before this book?
All three? Them?
Three.
I think three specifically. They've been Roshar,
Scadrial, and wherever else.
Whatever the Tress one is.
Yeah, that's right.
I just kind of assume they've been everywhere, that they've lived on just about every planet at some point.
It's their fault that everybody's blonde in the Cosmere.
All blonde everywhere traces back to them.
Yes.
Maybe. Maybe. But they are on their way back to Silverlight, is the plan.
Man, I just had this massive bunny trail in my head. I feel like there's a big Warbreaker discussion to be had there on like hair color and eerie and light hair color and stuff like that. Do you guys remember Warbreaker?
Mm-hmm.
And how the royal line is defined by like their white golden hair or whatever. Vague memories of Warbreaker. Not a big Warbreaker guy, but anyway.
I think that brings us to kind of the end of these chapters. Did you guys have anything else that we neglected to talk about?
Let me consult my handwritten notes here of the episode. Oh, yes. Okay. One quick thing I wanted to mention. I cannot get the idea or the mental image of a blank computer 3D modeling program for the cognitive realm here, where all there is there's an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z-axis, and it's just empty. And anything you put in, anything in the cognitive realm just has an x-axis, which is where the unsee begins. Am I getting that axis correct? I always mix them up. And then the y-axis would be the Nell, the Grand Nell. That's your reference point. So the x and y coordinate you can go find. And then the z-axis is, you know, your third dimension. So it's so empty that you have to draw your little reference lines through the cognitive realm, and those are your reference points. Because Starling mentions that you can't go off the trade routes. So if you think about that as a grid, they're just drawing lines between points on a grid, and you have to follow those lines so you don't get lost. That's how I've been thinking about the cognitive realm this whole time.
Which, if you think about the nature of the cognitive realm, maybe that checks out, because all of us as beings, we exist in the third dimension. We can't even really comprehend much outside of that. So in the cognitive realm, it's a blank slate, three dimensions.
Yep. You're just wandering around this really empty computer program.
There you go. And it's just generatively, what is the term? Generating as you go. It's like a video game term for this.
There is a term for the, ooh, I should know that.
I had it in my head a second ago, now it's gone.
Procedurally generated?
That might be it. I think that might be it.
It's
procedurally generating as you go.
Feasibly.
As you think it. Everyone out there thinks it.
If an anti-investiture entity falls in the forest and nobody hears it, does it actually make sound?
No.
You have to be there to witness the sound?
Definitely.
That's all I had.
Paul, anything else?
I think you were right. It's procedural generation. I was looking that up. Nothing else, Your Honor. Our crew is going and growing, and I'm excited to see where all they go.
I am as well. And with that, I think that'll wrap us for episode 282. Come back and join us next week, where we're going to be covering chapters 29 through 33. But until then, thank you for joining me, Paul and Trevor.
See ya.
Yep.